Marty Lurie here, KNBR 680 with Howard Bryan of ESPN. Howard, Scottsdale, spring training. You and I, God, this is probably about almost 20 years for you and me, but what a great time.
Funny, this is a 20th year. You're making me feel old. It's 2017, isn't it? Yeah, my first year coming here was 1998, first year on the beat with the Oakland A's, the San Jose Mercury News, and it's still always great coming here, but boy, it is a reminder that the calendar keeps on going, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. This is my 20th year of my show, by the way, this year in the Bay Area, 20 years. All right, let's turn the clock back just a little bit to the World Series. I tell people I saw a World Series that I don't think I ever saw before, and that's where the starting pitchers weren't a big deal, but they couldn't wait to get to the relief pitchers. Is this what baseball has turned to?
Well, and that's the game now. I think that what's ended up happening is that it's funny, you look at the money, and the money had always been starting pitching, even though when you look at the starting pitching, they're not going as deep into games anymore. They're going six, maybe seven innings. Seven innings is considered great for a starting pitcher now. And then this postseason, the Andrew Miller and Aroldis Chapman phenomenons changed everything. And then you saw the money in the offseason that went to relief pitchers, to Jansen and to Chapman. And now you see a lot of conversation this spring is going to be about how do you use relievers? Do you use relief pitchers? Can you actually use a relief pitcher over the course of 162 the same way you used Andrew Miller? Are you suddenly going to do that old Theo Epstein, Bill James closer by committee thing where you take your best pitcher, and if he can give you two innings in a 2-2 game in the fifth inning, do you do that? Is that when that guy comes in? Obviously, it's a great conversation to have, and it sounds very innovative until you get to the ninth inning and don't have anyone to finish a game for you. So we'll see how they play it out, and I honestly think that a lot of this innovation, or these thoughts of change are good for the game, but in practical application, it will be interesting to see how they implement it.
Boy, Howard Bryan, ESPN, with us. You go back to watching the Cubs win the World Series, and everyone said, well, it's like the Red Sox when they won, or the White Sox when they won. It's good for baseball. And it was a very young team, and, you know, it's a young game now.
Well, it's a young game now, and I think when you look at the numbers and you say, okay, well, how do we look at what we just saw? Well, one of the things that you see when you look at the Cubs is there's no reason why they can't win it again next year or this year. I mean, they're perfectly set up for it. They're still the best team. I don't think they lost anything that would suggest that they can't compete or that they're not going to be at the absolute top. But I think one of the things that I really enjoyed most about watching them this year, or last year rather, was how everything was by a hair. Everything. Even though they were the best team, even though during the spring everybody talked about how the inevitability of the Cubs winning, even after getting swept by the Mets the year before, the bottom line with that team was that, one, they were down 3-1 to Cleveland, and two, they had to score four runs in the ninth inning to avoid a winner-take-all in the first round division series against the Giants. So you're looking at this, and you're going, okay, if the Giants had just held on, the one thing that killed them all season was not being able to hold leads late, if they had held on to that 1-3-run lead up 5-2 in the ninth, you got Johnny Cueto in Chicago, winner take all. I mean, how much fun would that have been?
Yeah. No, amazing, amazing. And then, of course, you have Cleveland coming back. And I thought the World Series matchup, you'd rather see the Giants because I'm here, but the World Series matchup was pretty good.
It was great. It was phenomenal. And I think that even though it hurt the Indians at the end, one of the big issues that we've been dealing with in baseball for so long, and it's an issue that hasn't gotten solved and needs to get solved one year, it's really going to hurt the game, is how do you play your most important games in the worst weather? Yeah. And this is a November World Series, yet in a Game 7, it was 70 degrees in Cleveland. And look at how that game was played, just from a comfort level from the fans, but also at that temperature, some of those balls don't get out in a 35-degree or a 40-degree game. And so it affected how the game was played. I think it was great for baseball that they could rely on a little bit of global warming for a good game. But it's something that at some point, if the Minnesota Twins or someone actually becomes a good team, you get an open-air stadium out there in a November World Series. And they've added days to the calendar this year, So the November World Series is going to become part of the game. And 1 year, it's going to hurt the sport. Yeah. And it's not something that you want to see.
All right, Howard Bryan with us. You're going to be with the Commissioner Rob Manfred, I know, while you're down here. We hope in Arizona. But, heck, he's in the news just about every single day. Replay, changing the pace of the game, relief pitching, changing the strike zone. My goodness, I mean, really, every day it's another issue. I'd love to get your take on some of these things.
Well, I think one of the things that you're looking at in the game, I was speaking with Jed Hoyer, with the GM of the Cubs, yesterday, and part of the conversation was being, you know, change or die, evolve or die. And obviously, I like the fact that baseball is asking itself questions, that baseball is not deciding that it is untouchable. I think one of the arguments that Jed had made was 100 years ago, the three most popular sports in the country were baseball, horse racing, and boxing. And nobody cares about horse racing or boxing anymore, so why do we think we're invincible? And I think that's good. I also think, though, that one of the things that baseball has to really pay attention to is to make sure that it isn't always chasing the tail. It's not always, you know, it's not always appropriate to compare it to hockey or basketball or football. You're a special sport. You're the special sport. And there are things about your game that matter that don't matter to other games. You've already messed up your record book because you didn't think it mattered as much because of steroids. So don't mess up the rest of it, too. In fact, try to restore the magic that came with the specialness of your record book and the specialness of your sport. That said, I do understand that you're paying attention to data that shows that people are watching on screens and they're looking at tablets now, and attention spans are at a premium and all of those things. And can you go where baseball is going right now? The game is asking itself this question. Can we survive at 3 hours and 3 hours and 15 minutes, at 3 hour and 20 minute games? Are we going to be able to be viable at those minutes? And so they're trying to shave time off the game and trying to be innovative while doing it. I don't know if I like a courtesy runner on second base in a Major League Baseball game. Why don't we just go back to 1-1 counts or play seven innings? But I do give them credit for at least thinking about things that may make this game different or may make the game better. It's not a stone tablet.
There is a spirit of the game, though, that people within the game believe, and I think if we apply it to replay, there is a spirit of what replay really should be, and then you fight against the world of technology today and the black and white of get it right. And that's a dilemma for baseball, the spirit of baseball versus technology.
Well, especially on a slide at second base. And I think that you're looking at the unintended consequences of technology. At some point, I mean, let's not forget that Bud Selig and Joe Torre and a lot of the old guard, they were completely anti-replay. They did not want replay to be in baseball. They didn't want the baseball equivalent of throwing a red flag out on the field on a challenge play. And I appreciated that and understood it. On the other hand, when you have 300 million people at home with 50-inch televisions and DVR and super slow-mo and replay and all of that, you have to correct these calls. And so, remember at the World Series last year, I was talking to Coco Crisp and talking to Lindor and some of the other players about how they felt as players about the spirit of the slide rule, the tag rule at second base. Are you looking to make sure that the ball beat the runner, or are you looking for the half millimeter that the guy came off the bag in super, super slow-mo? But the players, I was surprised to see that the players said no. If the super, super frame showed that I came off the bag a half a millimeter for a nanosecond, then so be it. I'm out. I was surprised that the players felt that way. I thought they were going to say no. The spirit of the rule is I beat the throw. I should be safe. But they are absolutists on this, and it's their game. And I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. You talk to the players. And, of course, they're younger. And yeah.
They grew up with the technology, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
And they grew up with the technology. And they also, I think it's better for their mindset. One of the things that replay does for you is it allows you to move on to the next play without feeling a sense of grievance. And so now that it showed, no matter how ridiculous, that you were out, then you are out. Now you can move on. And that makes sense. I think we all just want this to make sense. And also what you don't want to do is you don't want to undermine the credibility of the sport. You don't want people thinking, okay, there was a play and it was out, and we all saw that you were out, and then you chose not to correct it. Therefore, we don't trust you. And that, especially in an age of social media and everything else, where the conspiracy theories just go and go and go, the last thing you want is for your fan base to believe that you have some ulterior motive to not correcting a call. That's the key.
Yeah, boy, beautiful. I love Howard. Having Howard on from ESPN, Howard Bryant. Last year, they said, well, 30% of the plays ended in a walk or strikeout. So they're dying to get the ball in play, raise the strike zone to where, you know, it's 2 inches above where it was last year. What do you think about that?
Well, I think there's a few things at work here that some you can help and some you can't help. Some of the technology in this. Look, if you're going to be an analytic sport, which is what this game is, if you're going to mine data, then data is going to give you an edge. Obviously, it makes perfect sense. And so you learn that, okay, if you want to get to bullpens and get the great $100 million starting pitcher out of the game, then you take pitches. Okay, then that's what happens. And it extends your game, and it extends the lack of offense because you're taking pitches. You're not swinging the bat. You're also compensating players for not swinging at the first pitch. You're compensating guys who have higher on-base percentage. You're ridiculing guys. Remember, Nomar Garciaparra hit 372 one year, but he got ridiculed for swinging at the first pitch all the time. But he hit 372. So maybe that's going to change a little bit. But I think that what the sport is doing is it's so much smarter now that everyone knows what everybody else is doing. And it's going to be really, really difficult to do some of the things that baseball wants to do. It's going to be hard to strategically take time off the game when the strategy tells you to go deep into counts. And the strategy tells you to be specialists and have 3 or 4 pitching changes so you can mix and match each guy. Well, that adds time to the game. You know, you have 4 pitching changes in an inning. That's what, 10 minutes all of a sudden in one inning. So can you have everything both ways? But that is the specialness of the sport. And that's what the data has told you, that this guy hits 110 against lefty, so therefore you're not going to leave a righty in the game. So you got to bring in a left-hander. So what are you going to do about that? This is where the game is. I'm wondering if they go radical, if they decide to say, okay, 1 pitching change per inning, and you know, barring injury. So now you got to come in and you got to close your own deal. What does that do to the money? What does that do to the specialist? So now if you're Mike, you know, old Mike Myers used to go pitch to 1 batter, all of a sudden you better learn how to pitch to righties as well.
Yeah. No, I see that coming. I see that's one that doesn't sort of jeopardize the integrity of the game, but it could speed it up because he wants to speed it up. There's no question about it. Last thought for you. So again, it's a pleasure to speak with Howard Bryant of ESPN. Do you see the computerized strike zone coming and with all the arguments we have around balls and strikes?
There's a lot of talk about automation, and automation is, once again, when we talk about technology, you're talking about toll takers at the Bay Bridge. Do they have to be there? And no toll takers at the Golden Gate Bridge. And the fact that you can take a drone the size of your hand and you can bomb an ISIS stronghold 12,000 miles from here. And if you can do those things, why do you need a person behind home plate? You can have a machine call balls and strikes too. That's where it's going. And I don't like it, but I also remember listening to people talk about human element when it came to the base paths, and suddenly we have replay as well. So I think that it is inevitable that you're going to have more automation, and the robot umpire, you may actually have an umpire sitting behind home plate who's simply calling the call, you know, calling it a ball or a strike, as we saw on HBO a few months ago. I don't know if I like that, but at the same time, look at tennis. You look at tennis, and there's a machine that tells you whether the ball touched the net or not, and there's a machine that tells you whether the ball was in or not. And baseball is holding out, and I wonder how much longer you can hold out if the technology is going to be more accurate than the human eye.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, and I'm not against it. I've seen it. I've seen it in action, and after about 5 minutes, you don't even realize that there is a computerized strike zone letting you know what the ball and strike is, and the umpire just makes the call. I think the media, in a sense, the broadcast media, is part of the problem in this thing because they tend to second-guess every call at the plate.
The broadcast media, it's also the technology on your TV screen. When you're watching a game and it's got this floating strike zone, that was never intended to be a tool for... It was only intended to be an entertaining tool. It was never a tool that was actually accurate. It's not an accuracy tool. And it's become one. So now you're watching watching the game, and if the ball doesn't touch that weird little square, then suddenly the umpire blew his call, and that's not actually, that's not accurate. So there's an incredible amount of pressure on the umpires, and it's an unfair level of pressure because I defy anyone to go back there and make those calls as well as they do, because it's hard. That job is really hard. That ball's coming at you 98, 99 miles an hour. You got to make a decision, and it goes back to this idea of professional respect. I have a lot of professional respect for people who do this job, but once again, my professional respect or your professional respect for an umpire will have very little value if you have companies that can prove that their technology is flawless or is even more accurate than an umpire. And I think sometimes it's not even a question of accuracy as much as it is comfort. You want to know that there's no bias. And what is one of the things that, remember when I was covering the A's, one of the things that, that Kenny Mocha and Art Howe used to say all the time, the toughest call to get in baseball is a called strike in the ninth inning at Fenway Park or Yankee Stadium. And so an automated umpire would eliminate that. And so there's some merit to it. It's a little frightening, but there's definitely some merit to it.
All right. Great to talk baseball with Howard, Brian. Howard, great to see you. What's up with you these days? Tell me.
I'm just here working. That's okay. It. Yeah, I'm working. I'm doing my stuff for ESPN the magazine and working on projects. There's never a shortage of things to write about. There's never a shortage of things to talk about. And I think one of the things that I enjoy most about our business is the spring, is being out here and being able to look at people face-to-face, ask them questions, talk to them, learn from them. It's not something that I've always enjoyed, the fact that our business has gone into, we do a lot more talking than we do listening. And so it's nice to get out here and actually report and listen to what people in the game have to say about where their industry is going. That's why we do this.
Beautiful. One of the best, Howard Bryant. More coming up, KMBR 680, the sports leader.